wow, this guy looks happy. There's no way that this dude is there's wrong with this guy. Come on in. But no, I didn't know that you didn't smile at a passport. So I got not a bad photo, if I could say. It was a smirky little Mona Lisa I threw out, and hopefully it works. So now we got a running bet. Heitkamp took May 1st. I hope he's right. I took May 9th, of course, the day before I would leave for Canada, and many other ones in. So we're holding our... The quickest it could come is 5 weeks. By the way, if you're about to renew or get yours for the first time and you pay all the extra money to expedite both ways, they tell you 5 to 7. But there's been horror stories of 8 to 9 to 10 to 11. So there's a little trip for a little tip from your Uncle Jack today. Do not procrastinate. Do not do as I do. Do as I possibly say. Busy show on a Tuesday. We got baseball coming up tomorrow and Thursday and Friday. Dick Bremer, the television voice of the Minnesota Twins, stops by. And as Matt and I were talking about yesterday, the Twins are shakers and movers. And the Twins actually now just signed another arm. In my computer baseball league, I had Chris Archer a couple years back. He was fantastic. Nah, of course, some injury is melded, kind of woven into Archer, but he's a Twin. And if he can resort to some sort of resemblance of his career earned right, you know, this guy's a rookie of the year for the Rays years ago. And he got a lifetime ERA, I think, in that 3.7, 3.8 range. Opponent's batting average in that 2.25 to 2.40 range, something like that. I think he throws kind of a heavy ball. Maybe do some ground, get some outs. You kind of buddy him up there with Sonny Gray, and you got your Bundys of the world and Overs of this world and so on and so forth. And maybe, just maybe, you've got an arm that can help you that can chew up some innings out of the gate. We'll talk to Dick Bremer about that coming up at 20 after the hour. And I don't know about you, but and Matt, I don't know if you caught much of it last night. And all morning long on both our stations, on KFGO my morning, I was chatting with Dan Michaels and Doug Lear and then Heitkamp and all the way through. And it's okay to admit that you're enjoying the NCAA women's basketball tournament, by the way. And if you were going to compare the two tournaments, as much as the men play above the iron and throw it down and physical play and catch and shoot and quick, I get it. I'm with you. But it's okay to admit that just maybe, the women's tournament has probably brought a little bit better entertainment of basketball. Would that be a way to put it, man? There've been some tight games, some well played games, some execution type game, right?
Good execution? Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that's kind of what the women's game prides itself on, is that it is a little more fundamentally sound, I think, yeah. Because they don't a lot of the times have the athleticism and explosiveness that the men have, so they've got to rely more on the crisp passes and
good
ball
screens,
movement,
yeah.
You know, half court sets being crisp, like. You look at that double overtime game between UConn and NC State yesterday. I mean, that was just remarkable.
And Paige Beckers, here's a kid that Minnesota kid, player of the year last year, injured this year, surgery this year, in-season surgery. Returns to the lineup and drops 27 last night, and UConn wins, as you said, in two overtimes. And it really has been. And the Final Fours in Minneapolis at Target Center, that's going to be large. You've got Stanford in that thing. You've got, obviously, Stanford and UConn are playing each other. South Carolina right now is risen to the cream of the crop on the women's side. And Louisville's no slouch. So actually, that little four-pack, those teams are going to present a nice little show, and I'm excited about that. That's fantastic. Whereas the men, same thing. It is Duke and North Carolina, and that alone, it's the blue bloods of the blue bloods that are playing in the final. I mean, Kansas involved, for goodness sakes, right? Villanova, Kansas, Duke and North Carolina. So when you look at the two Final Fours going in NCAA basketball, as much as there have been great stories, the South Dakota women were a great story, and almost picked off Michigan and had Michigan. Maybe didn't have them, but they were there with them, and they could have picked them off. Now, I don't know if they would have gone on and defeated Louisville, but I loved to have seen it. But South Dakota women were a story in the women, and St. Peter's was a story in the men. So we had our stories, And we now have the Blue Bloods that are basically on both genders, the men and the women's tournament, in the Final Four. So, I'm looking back at basketball season, even locally. You know, 4 wins Minnewaukan was a story. Undefeated season. You know, Rick Smith's mother passes, emotional upon emotional, you know, after that was a story. Minot boys and girls win the A, both genders. The A girls led primarily by a couple of eighth graders. That was a story, you know. So and the Kindred girls, great story. The Moorhead Spuds had to stay, you know, the boys had to stay. There's been a basketball season, man, and we're going to say goodbye to it here totally. From the high school to collegiate ranks, non-pro, I got to say we've had a pretty good season.
Yeah, right? You're telling me, Jack.
Overall?
I mean, going around and covering, there's just so much talent in the Red River Valley area here. And, I mean, you know, Kindred's boys, of course, coming up just a little bit short against 4 Winds Minnewaukan, but they had a sensational season as well. And, yeah, it's just, you know, we're very, very lucky, I think, to have the amount of talent that we do in our area.
And the Wolves are doing great. You know, yeah, they're coming off a loss to Boston, but that's the pro side. Yeah, you're right. I think between the prep and the collegiate. Speaking of the collegiate sports scene, Scotty Quass, our colleague and friend, does the play-by-play for – maybe I even buried partially the lead. South Dakota State's women are still playing, by the way. They're in the WNIT, and they're in the Final Four. It's the semifinals, and they're playing UCLA. Guess where? Brookings. Thank you very little. So the UCLA Bruins are heading to Brookings on Thursday. Scotty Quass will stop by in the second half hour today. Happy birthday to Cy Young. I brought this up before, and I don't think I'll bring it up with Dick Bremer, who comes on. Maybe we will, but I think Dick and I have chatted about this before. And I brought it up before, and we talk about baseball. It was funny when I was speaking to the class in Tioga during my vacation, doing a little reading and all that kind of stuff. You know, again, you always get this question if you're a broadcaster that broadcasts multiple sports. And it's always, which one do you, and I'm sure you've had this before, Matt, which one do you like the best and to do? And I told a young boy, and I said, I have identical twin daughters. It's like asking me which one I love more. It's not a fair question. But baseball, I said, but I'll tell you this much, baseball's in my veins. You know, everything else is great. I enjoy all of it. We've got the UND football spring get together this week, and I love it all. Basketball, are you kidding me? It's fantastic. So on and so forth. But baseball, if you put a needle in my veins, baseball would seep out first because there's just so much about baseball. It's just so different. It has time. It has development. It has stories. It's all of it. It's you're painting a picture. If you do your job well enough on radio, you can almost smell the grass through the radio by how a broadcaster brings the game to you, or you get an ambiance. Just baseball has all that. But I mentioned it's Cy Young's birthday today. And I know that in baseball, you know, what other sport is known for its numbers more than baseball? What other sport is known really by its numbers than baseball? All sports have numbers. I mean, come on, that's how we're judged. All sports have numbers. If we can talk about Tom Brady's rings, we can talk about completions and touchdowns and receiving yards and rushing yards and numbers. Third within a game, third down completion percentage. You know, hockey, we can talk about goals. We can talk about Sanderson, but, you know, he just signed with the Sens and what he, you know, the points he has accumulated. Kirill Kaprizov, we can do numbers and points. Basketball, are you kidding me? I mean, we just, you know, we saw the game by Carl Anthony Towns, and then the night after we saw another. So numbers. Baseball, among all sports, I think primarily dives deeper into numbers. And this is why on Cy Young's birthday, I believe personally that you should never use the word never when we're talking about records. I use it for one record primarily, Matt. And it's baseball, and it's Cy Young, and it's wins. 511 is to me, and you can chime in at 35270, and I know we've danced a little bit down this highway before. You can go to the hit streak, DiMaggio's hit streak. We can go to consecutive innings, you know, Oral Hershiser, consecutive innings pitch. There's so many numbers out there. But the one that I truly, if you had to pick one where you would use the word never, as in never will be broken, I go right to Cy Young, and I go to 5'11". Matt, you know what 5'11 is? You know how many 20-game winners there are in baseball? And it's really reduced over the years for a number of reasons. 20-game winners in baseball, you know, you just don't see many. Well, we'll take 500 and divide it by 20, and you'll get the number of seasons that you'll need to have 20 wins. Well, if 20 wins is a rarity in baseball, how many seasons do you have to play and pitch well enough and have your team in the game to get to 5'11"? So if I threw out that to the text club today at 35270, if you are going to reference a record and use the word never, and you can only pick one, tell me it's not Cy Young's 511 wins.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you'd have to win 20 games for 25 seasons just to get to 500, and then you got to win another 11 after that. I mean, so you got to break into the majors when you're like 19, 20 years old and pull a Tom Brady and play until you're 45. That just doesn't happen anymore. It'll never happen again.
Thank you. And that's why I go to that number. I mean, I guess to be fair, I could throw it, give me two. But if you had to, if you agree that with me, and Matt, I'm sure you're agreeing with that, 5'11 is if you had to use the word never of any numbered record, that would be it. And if you agree with that, then okay, throw out another one that you could use the word never. What would be your next choice if you believe that 5'11, as far as wins go, is the ultimate. Home runs might go. You know, who knows? They may say that pitchers have to throw it underhand in the third pitch. Who knows what the rules will change, Matt, as we get these bandbox ballparks going on. Players, again, become stronger. We hear the word trajectory and bat spin and reverse spin, hitting down at a ball, lifting a ball up and coming. You know, there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah, I mean, it surprises me that Joe DiMaggio's hit streak has never really been challenged in the modern era.
That would probably be my number two. It would probably, that's not a bad call. So anyway, we'll throw that out of the text club today, only because it's Cy Young's birthday today. He'd be 155. Well, he wouldn't get a win at this age if he was still pitching. His real name, Denton True Young. He went by Dent Young as a young boy, and he was known as Farmer Young and then Farm Boy Young. Here's a little piece of Cy Young trivia today. Put in your back pocket. We'll break and bring Dick Bremer on. Cy Young's nickname, do you know how he got it? I threw it out for a trivia question on our brother station this morning. Do you know how Cy Young got his, why he's called Cy? I'll tell you. His nickname came from the fences that he had destroyed using his fastball. The fences had looked like a cyclone hit them. Reporters, because they just started shortening it up, just started calling him Cy. And it became the nickname that he used for the rest of his life. That's how Cy Young got his nickname. We'll stand by Dick Bremer coming up around the corner. Talk a little Twins baseball. Scotty Kwa, South Dakota State play-by-play, joining us. Second half hour. It's a Tuesday edition. Jack Michaels Show at 740 The Fan. It's always just fantastic to talk with Dick Bremer, voice of the Minnesota Twins, brought to you by Jefferson Lines, as you heard, your number one bus experience for over 100 years. And Dick joins us today, and we're talking baseball. And Dick, before you jumped on, we were wishing Cy Young happy 155 today. And Maddie and I were chatting about records that just probably aren't going to be touched. And I know, Dick, you and I probably have talked about this before when we're talking baseball. There are a certain few. I know that one, 5'11", is a large number, Dick. There's other records out there. I think someone had popped in with Joe DiMaggio's hit streak. But, Dick, to you, when you dive inside numbers on that, it's tough to use the word never, but I think there are a few things in baseball that we can probably use the word never on, correct?
Yeah, and I think particularly on the pitching side, because pitching has changed so much in the last 10, 15 years. A bunch of us were discussing the other day at the ballpark in Fort Myers, Bert Blylevin has 60 shutouts. That's not even the record, but that's I can't imagine, given the way the game is played now, that anyone will even approach that. I mean, if you had, I don't even know Max Scherzer, whether he has 10 shutouts. So, you know, on the pitching side of things, things have certainly changed. And, yeah, there are a lot of records out there that will never be broken.
Consecutive longevity records like Ripken is another. To that point, Dick, because we're dealing with, you know, these are entities. And if someone's got a twist or a turn or a little strain here and that, they're probably not playing the next day, correct?
Yeah, if Cal Ripken was playing now these days, it would be interesting because just about every manager in the game, from Dave Roberts, Rocco Baldelli, all the way down to the new guys, they're all very, very conscious about overloading athletes. We see it in play here, even in an abnormal spring training this year, the concern that why shoot bullets in March when you're going to need them in September? So it's a different game. Can be argued whether it's a better game or not, but it's a different game. I don't think anybody would deny that. And to see these records that have stood already for a long time, and you see how the game has changed, it's hard to imagine anybody approaching 500 wins again.
Got to be great to be around the club, Dick, especially with some moves that the Twins have done leading up to the brand new season. I think if Twins fans were in the camp of, well, they're not doing anything in the offseason, and looks like we're going to have this kind of year again this year, and boom, they make a splash with Correa, and then kind of a boom with Archer last night, and maybe he's not the rookie of the year that he was, or maybe even at times with the Rays, but obviously, they feel that they've got something in him that they can plug in maybe to the rotation, huh, Dick?
Yeah, if he's healthy, he can pitch very well. He just hasn't been healthy. So you can say that about a lot of guys. You know, it's interesting to see how the roster has kind of transformed over the last, since the last game of last year when the Twins had, a really young team. And you look at all the veterans that have been added now, from Sanchez and Urshela, Sonny Gray, Dylan Bundy, now Chris Archer, Carlos Correa. This no longer is as young a team as it once was. And the hope is that these veterans who've already, achieved an awful lot in their careers, that there's a little magic dust left in all of them and make this a much better year in 2022.
And you mentioned, I think, the key thing, Dick, if healthy. So if we use that as the precursor for any team that we're talking about or you're trying to project, and if we just take that is the constant variable, if healthy. Let's just say if healthy. And I saw that you tweeted out a possible projected lineup for opening day, and it is a Buxton and a Rise and Correa and I think Polanco and a Sano and a Kepler and a Sanchez and Alex Kirilloff and Urshela. That just sounds like the makings of some guys that got some experience, some guys that have the ability and could project themselves to produce runs. Dick, that's not a bad lineup.
No, and I think we may have talked about this last week. To me, the benchmark as you get ready to start a season, as we are now, and you look at a lineup and you go, well, can this lineup score 800 runs, roughly five a game? If they can score 500 runs, particularly with the expanded playoffs, I think the Twins will find themselves back in the postseason. The concern, of course, is the pitching. How many are you going to, allow if you score your 800 runs? But generally, it's a pretty reliable benchmark. If somebody scores 800 runs, they usually find themselves playing again in October.
Dick Bremer joining us here today, brought to you by Jefferson Lines. And Dick, quickly, of all your years of broadcasting, all those great clubs, and even the World Series teams, I'd imagine that the great ones have an identity. They have an identity. I'm not sure, at what time do you feel like, okay, this team's got an identity? Do you need an identity? If so, what? And I hate to make it project. I mean, my goodness, we haven't even played a game that counts yet on this. But when you look at the line, and what the Twins have done, is there a potential, I'll use those words, Dick, a potential identity that could form with this year's club?
Yeah, but I would caution Twins fans to not look for it too early. You look even in Twins history, the best teams that the Twins have had, that identity, that personality, has it evolves over the course of a season. You know, it's been said forever that, you know, a manager waits 40 games to see what he has for a team. Well, in Twins history, in 1987, the team was just kind of flatlined around 500 and finally, you know, elbowed its way through a pretty weak division to get into the playoffs and took off from there. And in 1991, the team was below 500, worked its way back to 500 about the end of May, and then had that 15-game winning streak. And even more recently than that, the division championship team. Sometimes, you know, you don't see what a team can be right away. What you hope for is the opposite of what happened last year, when there were so many elements and components that created a, you know, pretty strong headwind, and the team was never able to get on track. But, you know, I would caution Twins fans to not read too much into, or actually baseball fans for any of the 30 teams, don't read too much sure. into what you see in the opening weeks because of the shortened spring training and all of that. I think it's going to take every team a little extra time this year to have that and form that identity.
A couple minutes remaining with Dick Bremer. Dick, to that point, are you in agreement that maybe a team takes on an identity or a personality of its manager? Is that a thing to you, or not so much?
I don't, you know, I look back to the World Championship teams for the Twins, and you know, Tom Kelly, the manager, was just, you know, pretty much all business. But the guys on the team were a fun-loving bunch, particularly in 1987. Right. I mean, they just had a blast together. And I don't know that Tom's personality was reflected in the roster all that much. Same, too, in 1991. But, you know, Tom's focus was on fundamental baseball. And both the 87 team and the 91 team certainly did that. So we'll have to wait and see. I hate to go back to such a disappointing year as last year, but there were just so many things that happened. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, maybe blame the manager for what happened.
Sure.
And, you know, Rocco's personality is still very much player friendly. And if the team can get off to a decent start, you know, I expect this team is going to be really fun to watch. And some of that will come from the manager who wants them to, you know, be fundamentally sound and be focused when they're playing. Certainly things are a lot more relaxed under his managerial tenure than they were under Tom Kelly's or even Ron Gardenhire's. But, you know, let's let this team develop together. When you bring all these different players from different organizations, and whether it's Chris Archer, Gary Sanchez, Carlos Correa, it typically takes a little bit of time for people to get to know each other and gel, if you will. And that might be what we'll say in retrospect about this Twins team, that the team in the second half of the year was a whole lot better than the team in the first half.
Great stuff with Dick today. Last one for you today, as you mentioned, with the shortened spring training, and then they'll break camp and boom, it'll all start counting. Hitters, pitchers, logic would tell you that maybe the pitchers might be a tad behind out of the gate. Dick, would you agree with that assessment?
In terms of stamina, yes. I don't know that we'll see many starting pitchers go beyond five innings, even not just the first week, but maybe even the first month of the season. Thankfully, there's going to be expanded rosters from 26, which is the new standard. Used to be 25, of course, but from 25 to 26. And now for the first month of the season, 28 players. And I would be surprised if there would be too many position players added to a roster with the two extra spots. I think it's going to be a pitching heavy expansion of the rosters, and I would expect the Twins to do that as well, allowing the pitchers to naturally progress the starters to six, maybe seven innings. You know, it's less of a concern for Taylor Rogers, who's been, you know, pretty much a one inning pitcher anyway, but the starters are going to need a little extra time. And thankfully baseball understands that and realizes that, and is going to allow for a couple of extra spots on the roster.
I know when the addition of Archer now on the club, they optioned Lewis Thorpe to AAA St. Paul. Lewis Thorpe, Australian, right, Dick? Your thoughts on Lewis Thorpe and what he can be and do for the Minnesota Twins?
Well, you know, there was a time when someone who threw 92 miles per hour was considered a flamethrower. Lewis throws 92, but it's almost like he's perceived as a soft tosser now. He needs to be really fine with his control. for the Twins to send him down. He had to go through waivers. No one claimed him, which is a measure of what he can do on the mound. I think every organization probably has some left-handers who can throw 92 miles per hour, and he was not picked up. The hope is that he can refine his game, and he's going to have to, so too for Devin Smeltzer. You need to be able to throw the ball where you want to throw it if you want to get people out. The problem with 92 isn't that it's only 92. It's just hitters now are geared up to hit 95, 96 and above. So when they see someone who only throws 92, it's not batting practice, but it's a lot easier to track a ball if you're used to tracking something a lot harder.
It's amazing, those words, how true they are, and that they're coming out of your mouth, though, Dave, because you're right. 92, 90 used to be, wow, 90 miles an hour, unless you were J.R. Richards, for goodness sakes. Oh, 100 miles an hour, that's going to... Dick, we always leave with something fun for you. On off days when you're in Florida, you personally, how do you enjoy the sunshine, or just get away from the park for a second, hang out, read a book? Are you a fisherman? Are you a golfer? What does Dick Bremer do when you got a rare off day in Florida?
Well, there have been times when I've brought golf clubs down here. I didn't do it this time because I didn't know how much time I have. And to be honest with you, yesterday was an off day, and I still went to the ballpark. There was stuff going on over on the minor league side. Sonny Gray pitched in a minor league game. So, yeah, it was an off day for the major league club in terms of activities at Hammond Stadium, and the players deserve that and enjoyed it, but I still found my way over there yesterday. Really geared up, as you might be able to tell, for the start of the season. I can't wait to get going a week from Thursday.
Yeah, that's why you are who you are, man, and that's just getting his hands in there and getting ready to rock and roll. Dick, can't wait till it does start. Thanks for the time, as always, today, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Dick.
You got it. Bye.
Dick Bremer joining us as he does each week, brought to you by Jefferson Lines. When we come back on the flip side of this, we'll make a call out there to Brookings, South Dakota. They're really excited about their season still going on. We're talking about the Jacks and the ladies. Scotty Kwas, very good play-by-play man. He'll join us next. It's the Jack Michaels Show with Matt English right here on 740 The Fan. Might have to be our Scotty Kwas intro. You've combined both the Jack Michaels Show and the Jacks, and yeah, and they are jumping. I'll tell you what. I was looking at South Dakota State's women, you know, after the, which I think we all agree probably should have been in the NCAA tournament. I think that goes almost without saying. But then they get into the WNIT, and looking at the scores of this, knocking down Ohio 87-57, then had Minnesota at Frost Arena, and that was a 78-57 win. So again, a 21-point victory. Then they take on a very good Drake team, a really good Drake team, took them down by 18. Then I think was plus 14 in Alabama, if I'm not mistaken, at halftime on Sunday, and then went up by 17, and then Bama just went unconscious in the third quarter, only to watch South Dakota State make a nice little run and win that game 78-73. And what that's done for the Jacks has put them into the semifinal round of the WNIT, taking on UCLA. The man that calls the shots, that's Scotty Kwas, our dear friend and colleague. Good to see Scotty back on the right side of the bed over here, over there. So I'm glad you're feeling better, buddy. How you doing today, Scotty?
I'm doing well. You might say, in reference to that song, it's been a gas.
It's been a gas, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We've had a good time here. And anytime you start talking baseball and basketball and football all at the same time, you know, we got spring college football, you got Major League Baseball, you got women's basketball postseason. It's getting close to April, so this is all extra time and a lot of fun.
Scotty, is AJ's club, are the Jack ladies on a something to prove tour here? Going back to my first statement I said about, I think a lot of people thought they certainly had enough of a resume and a net ranking and all of that to be in the NCAA tournament, but it sure looks like they've got a chip on the shoulder, like we're not going to lose. So what do you think?
Well, I think there's certainly an element of that, and this team in particular has had a rough go. Again, we think back to the beginning of the season without an unknown on Maya Sellin. We didn't know who Paige Meyer or Haley Timmer was at that time. We really only had Peyton Burkhart and Tylee Irwin. You know, and those were some of the sure names that we knew. And now you look fast forward. I know in our post game the other day against Alabama, somebody asked Maya about the first time they played UCLA, who they'll see this week. And she's like, that seems like forever ago, you know, and they were a different team. We were a different team. So, I mean, it's going to be awfully interesting to see where it is. But yeah, I don't know if I say anything to prove. I think the Summit League in general knows that it's probably a one-bid list. It's an obvious two-bid team or two-bid league. The entire league would need to change in order for something just to be automatic, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I was and Matt and I were chatting about this earlier about how the NCAA women's tournament, and for that matter the WNIT, because that Alabama Jacks game the other day was just a really good game. And you had runs, you had leads diminished, you had leads lost, you had leads gained back, you had lead changes, you had big shots, three after three after three. It has been some entertaining basketball, Scotty.
They have really been great games, and I watched the other two semifinals, you know, Toledo and Middle Tennessee, and the other games that went on last night, and they were overtime games, last second shots, free throws. This WNIT has produced some really great contests here. Seton Hall, 78-75, they were the other winner last night. So, I mean, it was a three-point game, a two-point game, an eight-point game, and a five-point game, all to reach the semifinals here.
I did, and then in the tournament, in the NCAA tournament, of course, the UConn double overtime win, I mean, just off the charts. So I promised there'd be no math, and I forced it upon myself, Scott. I thought, I wonder what UConn's record is in the last 20 years. Like, how many wins does Gino Auriemma have under his belt in the last 20? And unless I did the math wrong, and that could be very capable, I think I came up with 677 wins and 51 defeats. And I thought, that's insane. And then I thought, well, you know, South Dakota State, who you call and in voice of, you know, they've put some wins in the hopper in the last couple of decades, too. And, yeah, came up with 529 in the last 20-plus this year. 529 with, I think, only one of those years in the last 2-plus decades has been under a 20-win season. That's impressive, Scott.
They certainly have. There's been an expectation. You know, they've kind of risen that bar. And AJ, I will say, is one of those that is, he's a tactician. You know, he certainly is really good in end of game situations. I think he's been able to, you know, put some people around him in terms of coaches and done a great job at, you know, not just winning programs, but winning games, but making a winning program. I think that's been very big in his mind. He gets asked a lot about games to games, but the formation of a program, you know, that's been a big forefront, and certainly support of a community, support of a university to come to games. You know, we're talking, you know, 3,000, 4,000, that helps fuel a win. No matter where you're at, if you're like USD, when they're in Wichita, Kansas, and they're packing a house, right, or when you're in Brookings and hosting a WNIT game, that certainly all helps fuel the fire, and being able to capitalize on, you know, striking when the iron's hot. Okay, now we hit the trail and we recruit hard, because right, this is what you're going to be a part of if you come here, and that certainly helps sell the deal too.
Do you, to that point, I'm glad you chatted about that too, and I'm sure, I know they're the rival, but one can't help but be impressed what South Dakota's women did and then almost continued to do in their run in the NCAA tournament. Does the strength of both raise all? You know, we talk about a rising tide lifts all ships. And what I mean by that is the success I just mentioned that the Jackrabbits at the Jacks have had for years, with the success that the Yotes have had now, obviously, in recent years. Does that lift, can that lift an entire league, in your estimation, Scott?
Oh, I certainly think so. And now if we get three or four teams, you know, when it gets down to the postseason, you know, whether you're in that field of 64 for the NCAA tournament, everybody wants to be there. 350 teams, everybody's striving for that. The thing that it ultimately comes down to is that net ranking. You know, we used to call it the RPI or the PALM, the PALM index and all that kind of stuff. But the net rankings, I was looking at that. The Pac-12, where UCLA is from, every one of those teams is in the top 100, even top 95, I think. Alabama, they're out of the SEC. Every one of those teams in their 14-team league is in the top 100. So Pac-12, for instance, they had six teams make the NCAA tournament and two teams make the WNIT. So eight of their 12 teams are in postseason tournaments. And we in the Summit League had three. So two in the WNIT and one in the NCAA. So I think in order for it all to move in a way, you know, the Jacks were 33 at one point. USD was 33 and 35. They were right in the mid-30s. And then the rest of the Summit League, I think, was in the 150s to, you know, 250s. There was a couple 300s there, I believe, with Omaha and such. But I think everybody trying to strive, and, you know, now not everybody, you know, 350 can't be in the top 100. But if we can get everybody in that Summit League to get that RPI to a you know, let's say a top 150, top 175,
right,
that will help the league when it comes to postseason selections.
Scott Quash joining his voice of Jacks. We'll only keep Scott for a little while. He's got to get those the vocal cords sound fantastic as always, Scotty. But you got a game in a couple of days against UCLA. By the way, for those that are wondering and tuning in, that's not in Los Angeles. That's in Brookings, South Dakota. And some people, and you can explain this, but I think it's pretty logical, because I was looking at the attendance in Corvallis over the weekend, the WNIT game there, maybe 2,800, 2,900. And I look at Frost Arena, and I'm thinking, of course they're playing at Frost. Of course they're being in Brookings. And I'll tell you this, as much as it may or may not be a big advantage, small advantage, some advantage, whatever it is, the bottom line is players like playing in front of crowds, and when you're getting $5,000 like automatically, Scott, of course that game's going to be in Brookings, right? You didn't think you were going to go anywhere else, did you?
Well, there's always a, you know, we're going to play it cautious. You never know.
Right.
Who puts what into their envelope when they make their bid. That's how the WNIT does it. It's round by round, bid by bid. SDSU has been aggressive at that because they see the value in that, and they have the ability to put that on the line. We think we can do this, and then they surpass it each time. They've had some experience with the WNIT organizers, which is Triple Crown Sports out of Denver. They kind of know how the game works, I guess, if you will. Middle Tennessee, they're another team. They just built that big facility. I can't remember how many years ago, but Middle Tennessee and Murfreesboro, they built a facility that holds like 10,000. They average a little over 3,000 for their women's games. So UCLA, which has not fared well in attendance this year, certainly I don't think, you know, I don't think that they have a donor that's just going to lay a bunch of money on the line, and they'll have traveled for every single game. Hmm. So they will certainly come here. And unique twist in that they've already played the team. And another unique twist is that AJ worked with Coach Corey Close from UCLA this summer during USA Basketball. They were, you know, Corey Close was the head coach, and AJ was the assistant for their basketball team that was in Hungary.
Oh, sure.
And so they got to know each other awfully, awfully well, and they trade notes. And so it was fun to see them interact when they were together in Florida at a neutral site. But yeah, that's the other added on beauty of this WNIT is that if you keep winning and you have a strong bid and you have a following and support of your community and university, you can keep hosting those games, and that's what it certainly made a difference against Alabama last weekend.
Last time, we'll let you get going. The last time you mentioned they've already played them, I think that was back in November in Florida, right? Was that right? In that invitational?
Yeah, that was Florida tournament there where they picked up the win. And again, SDSU, that was the first game Maya Sellin started for the year, too.
How about that?
She had played about 11 minutes the day before her first game back from her knee injury. And then she started against UCLA, and right before halftime, dove for a ball and partially dislocated her shoulder. And that's why she wears a shoulder brace now, because the last time they played UCLA was when she dove for a ball and wrecked her shoulder. So it's a physical affair. UCLA will throw elbows. There was a technical foul called in that game down there. They are an aggressive Pac-12 team. They play Stanford, Oregon, Arizona every time, every week. So that's the physicality that they're going to bring. So it'll be a good match.
I know that Bama got a little physical too. I saw some girls flying all over the court. So Scott, before we let you go, because where we're located, obviously out of the Fargo-Moorhead area, we could throw a stone into Tylee Irwin's hometown of Wahpeton, North Dakota. I don't think anybody up here that has watched Tylee or broadcast her games in high school and whatnot wants to see her career come to an end. What has she meant to South Dakota? That's a loaded question for you, Scott, but what has that kid meant to South Dakota State?
Well, certainly this, her basketball talent. When she steps on the floor, it's obvious. This kid knows what she's doing. She's not one of those that's going to be braggadocious. She's not going to lay it thick, but an unbelievable teammate. You know, I think she's one that gets around people. She's not going to smother people and not be obnoxious. She's just a great human being, you know. And Jack, as you know, when you travel with these teams, you get to meet these, you know, you get to meet them with their ponytails down.
Mm-hmm.
And you learn what they look like without a uniform on it.
Right.
So she's one of those that is, she's as genuine is probably a fantastic word. You've met Tylee once, you've met her again, 10 years later, she'll be the same person. So consistent. And you know, even though she's had a few things with her back, she's been very versatile, reliable, consistent. Those are other words that come to mind. Just a fantastic person. And you talk about milking that opportunity, taking every minute she's gotten and done something with it here. She's one of those that you remember, like your Megan Vogels, like your Shannon Schlegels, like your Melissa Paters.
Right.
People will remember Tylee Irwin, not just because she's played almost 160 games here in 6 years. She's become part of the furniture, but
she's done it
in a way that people remember her because of who she is and how she did it, too. She's a great, great personality and a fantastic leader. And what's always great, too, is that when they leave here, to watch them 5, 10, and 15 years and come back. So you're excited for her future as much as what she's done here.
That is really well put, Scotty. I don't want to have to make you predict the game. As you said, the two teams have played before, but I think you can guarantee probably a pretty good house and B, a pretty good contest Thursday night, right? Can we start there?
Absolutely. The reserve seats went in about 15 minutes at 7 a.m. yesterday morning. And then you know, looking at the scores that have been happening, this is a single-digit game. I will put it that way, and then because I live where I live, I'll say Jacks by 9.
I like it.
let's say that. If you want me to put it on the line, I'll do that.
I like the fact that you said a single-digit game, so I was nodding. I looked at Matt. He was nodding. And then you choose the highest end of the single-digit
game. Mr. Safety.
That's fantastic. Scott, good stuff. Keep the run going, man, and maybe we'll get a chance to chat down the line. Thank you, buddy, and we'll talk to you soon.
Jack, Matt, thank you, guys.
All righty, Scotty Kwas, play-by-play voice of South Dakota State University, Jackrabbit Ladies. The run remains. They host UCLA coming up on Thursday night at Frost Arena. You know, they carry, and I don't know where you sit on this match, Matt, and someone brought this up to me, and it, because you talk about rival, how can you cheer for such and such, and, you know, they're the ones that be. No, I think it's the other way around. Maybe it doesn't work in professional sports, but I think it does work at the collegiate level, as heated as a rivalry is. I think when a team is carrying the torch, it's not just for that town. You agree, Matt? It's almost for the league, too.
Yeah, I mean, it boosts the overall reputation of the league. I mean, you look at South Dakota State and what they've done here. I mean, the rest of the Summit League, as we said, yeah, you know, we played them tough in the regular season.
Right.
And here, I mean, they're steamrolling 15, 20-point wins against Power 5 programs. I mean,
right.
That's a good, you know, feeling. And, like, certainly, you know, the Summit League wants to beat them next year. But for them to kind of really, I think, boost the entire reputation and competition level of the league, I think nobody would be complaining about that.
I wholeheartedly agree. And you're right. Steamrolling is a good way to put that. And I try to put it into perspective. I mean, they just put 21 on Minnesota. You know, Drake is a very good team, by the way. If you haven't followed mid-majors in some, and not even a high major, but a very good mid-major, they dropped them by 18. Alabama, tough team. You know, Alabama, I mentioned where Ryan Cobbins and ESU is under the portal and transferred to Alabama. Alabama's already signed coming into their transfer. They got another kid coming in, and they got like someone that was Miss Tennessee basketball, and they got like Miss Georgia player coming. I mean, we're talking about the best in these states that are going to high majors, and teams like the Jacks are rolling them, and teams like the Yotes certainly did that too. How do you stare Baylor in the face in Baylor's backyard with the reputation and the staying power of a team like that and beat them? You know, and then you start picking off some other teams, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, wait a minute now. Maybe the degree isn't that far off. Maybe that lied. So the upper echelon of those mid-majors, case in point, upper echelon of the mid-majors can pick off majors and not just pick them off. Now, could they do that to the upper echelon of the majors? And that's the other bridge. And that's what we started today talking about, men's game and women's game. And I think that's the difference. I think the upper echelon of a mid-major, certainly can play with majors, but would have a hard time probably consistently playing with the upper echelon of the high major. Makes sense, right? That's why you see some teams that in, say, football, in the FCS, that are in the upper echelon, or not even maybe even the upper echelon of FCS, not surprising when they pick off an FBS team. Now, could an upper echelon of the FCS pick off an upper echelon of the FBS? Well, now again, we're talking about a little different brand here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the Bison. I mean, they're going to Tucson to play Arizona in the fall.
Yeah,
and Arizona's coming off a one-win season. I mean, the Bison should be favored in that game by at least a couple touchdowns.
Right.
But, you know, it's again, it's the point of can they go through the entire Pac-12 and still finish like 11-1, 10-2,
you
know?
Or in this example of an NCAA tournament, such as in basketball, you know, can on a Thursday you pick off Alabama and then on a Saturday you pick off a Baylor, you know, and that kind of thing. And that's what these ladies, to your point, that's what kind of they're doing right now. Now, granted, it's WNIT, but I even take that away at this juncture. You've rolled through some teams with pretty good high net ratings going on. So excited about that. As we started, should be excited about baseball, too. Hey, it's Sam Walton's birthday today. You know, he was... He opened up his first variety store at age 26. Man, you still got a shot. I mean, he ended up having a couple of dollars.
He did. His kids are pretty set now, I'd say.
He took a $20,000 loan from his father-in-law and then $5,000 he saved from his time in the Army and purchased a Ben Franklin. Next thing you know, billions of dollars. Thank you, Dick Bramer, for stopping by today. Thank you to Squatty Quas. Happy birthday to Cy Young also today. And thank you for joining us today. But Twins baseball coming up tomorrow during this time right here on 740 The Fan.